Today is Wednesday, October the 20th. We're on Samuel. We had looked last week at the remembrance as far as in Hannah's prayer where she talked about, Lord, remember me. We looked at that. And Blaine had mentioned Sunday, a couple of passages that he said that came to his mind. One of them was Psalms chapter 4 and verse 1, I believe. Psalms 4, 1, where David says there, hear me when I call, O God, of my righteousness. You have relieved me in my distress. Have mercy on me and hear my prayer. So as far as the remembrance and so forth, is to hear my prayer, to hear it to the point that you would honor my prayer, Lord, that you would do what I have asked or what my petition is. The other one was, okay. Okay, another translation had grace, be gracious and hear my prayer. So we've got the idea from that as far as what it meant, as far as to remember. It wasn't that God forgot, but it was that please answer my prayer. We had got up to the point to where Samuel is born at Ramah in chapter 1, verses 19 and 20. She keeps him there. Hannah keeps Samuel there. And she says that when Elkanah is getting ready to go up to Shiloh to offer the yearly sacrifice and his vows in chapter 1, verse 21, that she chose to stay behind. And she said that she did not want to go to Shiloh until she had the child weaned. And then after the child was weaned, then she would take him to Eli so that he may appear before the Lord and remain there forever. Amen. What, just when you think about it, how much of a sacrifice is that? How much of a sacrifice is that? How much of a sacrifice was that vow to Hannah? Now here's a child, she has a child, she hasn't had a child all her life. She finally has a male child that she asked for, that God gives her. She's been under the assault of the rival all this time. Benaiah was always hassling her over not being able to have kids. And now she's made this vow, and the child, Lord answers her, and she has this child. So how hard is that going to be on her? I mean, what do you think is going through her mind when she knows that, well, I've got this vow? How easy would that be for you mothers? How easy would it be to take your only child that you have been praying for and that you asked for and that you got and say, well, you know, as soon as I get him up to a certain point where he's weaned, then I'm going to turn him over. I mean, what emotions do you think is going through her mind? Is it going to be one of happiness or one of sadness or what?
She's the one that made the vow, though, that she would give it to God. She gave the car, she made the vow that she would do it. And nothing to do with God said, well, you'll be your own son. She made that vow. So to me, I look at it as a time of joy for even though being without that child. And she didn't know at the time that God was going to bless her with more children. She just simply asked for a child, made a child. And she made that vow of her own free will. And so that's kind of the way I looked at it. And when the other children come, that really took away some of the, if you want to say, pain or whatever from I'll have it, Samuel there.
I don't think it was one from the standpoint that she was dreading it, because you can tell from her prayer that she didn't dread it, that she was, as C.L. said, kind of happy for it. She was mostly in her prayer, she was praising God for what he had done and so forth, and some of the things we're going to look at. But she said that she's going to deliver him there and he would remain there forever. That didn't mean that she was cutting all ties from him, did it? Okay, it didn't mean that. Rama and Shiloh, she could still go to Shiloh and see him whenever, I'm sure. You know, it wasn't just like once a year. I'm sure she could have went at other times and seen him. Bernice?
I was thinking about why she made that vow. And as you said, y'all were going to do that Elkanah's sons were corrupt. Would that play a part in her making a vow for her to have a son and give him to God? Because his other sons were so corrupt.
Now, when you say that Elkanah's other sons were corrupt,
it says in chapter 2, verse 12, I read ahead.
Okay, now whose sons was in chapter 2 and verse 12 that were corrupt?
Eli's sons.
Okay. So, her dedication would have been from one that, here's one that can be a servant to you, Eli, as the priest, and okay. But could she not have run the risk that Samuel could have ended up being corrupt too? If Eli didn't even take care of his own sons and tell them and so forth, there was a chance that Samuel could have ended up corrupt too. That was a chance that could happen. Okay. She made this vow. And she tells him that she was going to wait until, until she has him weaned. And then, you know, CL and I talk about this. I don't know what age. Have no clue. Okay. I couldn't find where the scripture said at what age or whatever. There may be going into some historical background that they would tell you. I just don't know. I just know that when he went, he was a child because he was able to minister to Eli. From the text that we find, there are certain things that he could do. There are certain things he could hear. And he had certain responsibilities. So I take it from that standpoint that as a child, a young child, or a young one, he was able to do that. Okay? When we see what he had to do on that. So I can't say, I don't know if it was when he was a baby that Eli had to raise him or someone had to, I just don't know. It really doesn't say. She just said, I'm going to wait till he's weaned. The next thing we know, she's doing what? She takes him up there. Okay. Did anyone find out anything else along that line?
Well, you can look at the point too. You hear Jesus being 12 years old in the temple, the next thing, pretty much he's preaching. So just because it's not the next thing doesn't mean there's several years to pass.
Right. I do know that there would have been some years that would have passed.
If he's able to minister, he's have to be able to do certain responsibilities.
Right. There's time gaps in here that the Bible doesn't tell us about, but they are there. There's a time gap between the man of God when he comes and talks to Eli and then when the Lord appears to Samuel. There's a time gap there because of what is stated. You know, because when you know that there's a time gap, and I'll go ahead and say this now. When the man of God comes, he gave a pronouncement from God, did he not? When the man of God come and he told Eli, that was a pronouncement from God. Then, when you go over here to Samuel, and it says that, you know, Samuel's there sleeping, what does it say before that? That there wasn't any revelations or whatever. God was kind of silent. So, if you got God talking to the man of God over here and telling him to say this to Eli, and then over here it says he's been silent, there's got to be a time span. There has to be a time in there that God was silent. How long that was, I don't know. Okay. But I'm just saying that that's the necessary inference, what you have to infer from that. If God had a revelation over here to the man of God, and over here it says God had been quiet and silent, there's been some time that has passed. Okay? So, Hannah has made this vow, and in verse 23, Elkanah more or less tells her, what does he say to her? He says, it's okay, do what seems best to you, and wait until you have weaned him, but to do what?
Lord, establish his word.
Okay, fulfill what you told the Lord. Let the Lord establish his word. What you vowed to him, Hannah, be sure and you fulfill. Okay? She's got to fulfill that vow. When you go back to Numbers, the 30th chapter, Numbers chapter 30. There was two things here. One in what we're going to read is where you had to keep the vow or you could be released from the vow. Okay? In other words, Hannah had a choice depending on the circumstances that she had to keep the vow or Hannah could have been released from the vow. In chapter 30, verse 2, this is where Moses spoke to the heads of the tribes, said, this is the thing which God has commanded. If a man makes a vow to the Lord or swears an oath to bind himself by some agreement, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth. Or if a woman makes a vow to the Lord and binds herself by some agreement while in her father's house in her youth, and her father hears her vow, and the agreement by which she has bound herself, and her father holds his peace, then all her vows shall stand, and every agreement by which she has bound herself shall stand. But if her father overrules her on the day that he hears, then none of her vows nor her agreements by which she has bound herself shall stand, and the Lord shall release her because her father overruled her. So, here is a daughter that makes a vow in her father's house. He hears it. He can do what? He can overrule it. When?
The day of.
The day of. When he hears it, he can overrule it. Now, if he doesn't overrule it in the day of, then later on, he becomes guilty. We'll see. He becomes guilty if he changes and releases. Then he becomes guilty on the vow. Okay? But he can overrule it the day of. He hears it and it's okay. If indeed she takes a husband while bound by her vows or by a rash utterance from her lips by which she has bound herself and her husband hears it and makes no response to her on the day that he hears, then her vows shall stand and her agreement by which she bound herself shall stand. But if her husband overrules her on the day that he hears it, he shall make void her vow which she took and what she uttered with her lips by which she bound herself. And what would the Lord do? The Lord would release her. Also, any vow of a widow or a divorced woman by which she has bound herself shall stand against her. You make the vow, it stands. If she vowed in her husband's house or bound herself by an agreement with an oath, and her husband hear it, and he makes no response to her, and did not overrule her, then all her vows shall stand, and every agreement by which she bound herself shall stand. But if her husband truly made them void on the day he heard them, then whatever proceeded from her lips concerning her vows or concerning the agreement binding her, it shall not stand. Her husband has made them void, and the Lord will release her. Every vow and every binding oath to afflict her soul, her husband may confirm it, or her husband may make it void. Verse 14, now if her husband makes no response, whatever to her from day to day, then he confirms all her vows and all the agreements that bind her. He confirms them because he made no response to her on the day that he heard them. But if he does make them void after he's heard them, then he shall bear her guilt. Okay, so if he waits several days, however long, and then he says, no, you don't have to keep it, then what? He bears her guilt. These are the statutes which the Lord commanded Moses between a man and his wife and between a father and his daughter in her youth in her father's house. So, what choice, what would you say here when Elkanah tells Hannah, make sure you fulfill your vow? What choice then do you think that he had made? He didn't release her from it, did he? Okay. He didn't release her from it. Okay. So that's what he's telling her. You make sure you fulfill your vow. Okay. I'm sure she probably told him. Okay. I'm sure, you know, as a child, she probably said, oh, you know, I made this vow a long time ago and this and that and everything else. And she had the male child, and so he's supporting her in that. You make sure you fulfill your vow. Because the Lord did his part. You make sure. Okay? So, in verse 24, we find that after Samuel is weaned, Hannah takes her sacrifices according to the fulfilling of a vow. What were those sacrifices? And when you turn to Numbers chapter 15, Numbers chapter 15. Now, we see that Elkanah made his yearly sacrifice. He made all that, but he also took and made the sacrifices. They had the animals for the sacrifices of Hannah's vow. He also had that, and that was made at the time too. Chapter 15, starting verse 1. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, when you have come into the land that you are to inhabit, which I am giving you. Were they in the land? Was Elkanah and Hannah in the land that God had gave them? Huh? In 1 Samuel, they weren't in the promised land yet? Was Elkanah and Hannah in the land?
Yes.
Okay, so this is going to apply to them, isn't it? Okay. And you make an offering by fire to the Lord, a burnt offering or a sacrifice to fulfill a vow, or the free will offering, or in your appointed feast to make a sweet aroma to the Lord from the herd of the flock. Then he who presents his offering to the Lord shall bring a grain offering of 1/10 of an ephah of fine flour, mixed with 1/4 of a hin of oil, and 1/4 of a hin of wine as a drink offering. You shall prepare with the burnt offering of sacrifice for each land. Or a ram you shall prepare as a grain offering, 2/10 of an ephah of fine flour, mixed with 1/3 of a hin of oil. And as a drink offering, you shall offer 1/3 of a hin of wine as a sweet aroma. And when you prepare a young bull as a burnt offering, or as a sacrifice to fulfill a vow, or as a peace offering to the Lord, the vow, young bull, then shall be offered with the young bull a grain offering of 3/10 of an ephah of fine flour, mixed with 1/2 hin of oil, and you shall bring as a drink offering 1/2 hin of wine as an offering made by fire, a sweet aroma to the Lord. Thus it shall be done for each young bull, for each ram, or for each lamb, or young goat, according to the number that you prepare, so that you shall do with everyone according to their number. All who are native born shall do these things in this manner in presenting an aroma made by fire, a sweet aroma to the Lord. So, when you look at verse 24, when she had weaned him, she took him up with her. And what did she take? What did Hannah take? Or Elkanah took for Hannah. She took with him 3 bulls, 1 ephah of flour, and a skin of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord in Shiloh. So she brought the sacrifices of the vow to fulfill her part of it. Okay, along with the child. So she had that. Now, what does it state there at the end of verse 24? Okay, that's all I can say. Is it just says the child was young. He was weaned. The child was young. I don't know the age. I can't say. Okay? So they slaughtered a bull and brought the child to Eli. And when she's presenting him to Eli at Shiloh, what does Hannah do there in verse 25? We know some time has passed because what does she do? She has to explain herself, doesn't she, to Eli? Eli, hey, remember me, Eli? I was the woman that, you know, that was praying for a child and if you remember, you thought I was drunk and I was praying for a child, and the Lord has given me a child. He's granted me my petition, which I asked of Him for a child. And she said, my vow was I'd lent him to the Lord as long as he lives, that he should be lent to the Lord. And so that's why I'm here, Eli. I'm dedicating him to you. He's going to be lent to you. He's going to be, you know, your servant. And so that's going to be as long as I live, as long as he lives. Okay? And so there at Shiloh, what did they do? Last part of verse 28. They worship the Lord. Okay? In that. Okay? So that's where we're at the point where Samuel now, what all transpired, what happened, and how Samuel is presented there to Eli. Any thoughts? Okay. While they're there, we have another prayer starting in chapter 2 of Hannah. Okay. Now, the first prayer, what was her condition? You remember?
Sad.
The first prayer was for a child.
For a child. What was her condition? Okay, she was barren. What was her demeanor?
She was sad,
she was vexed, she was grieved, anguish of spirit, of heart. She wouldn't eat, wouldn't do that. Well, here now, we get another sense of what she is. She's not that way, is she? When you go through chapter 2, her prayer is not that way. Now, the thing you have to notice, when she did her vow, she was specific. It wasn't a selfish vow. Lord, give me kids so I can, you know, put Panai in her place. Okay? In this prayer, it's kind of two-sided in this prayer. And you'll see it when we go through it. Number one, she's praising God because He has answered her. And there's nothing wrong in her praising God and being happy and saying, God, you did this. God, you did that. But at the same time she's doing it in that prayer, what is she also doing? I don't think it's intentional, but in praising God for what He's doing, is she not condemning Peninnah? Doesn't Peninnah stand condemned? Look at that when we go through this prayer. Okay? Her heart is now not one of anguish, but it's rejoicing. Okay? She says, my heart rejoices in the Lord. My horn is exalted in the Lord. Why would she be exalted in the Lord? How is her horn exalted in the Lord? Voila, what does she have? She has a son. She has a son. Verse 2, what is she doing? She's no longer in grief, anguish of heart with her adversary, with her rival, but what? What can she do now? I smile at my enemies because I rejoice in what? Your
salvation.
What's another word for salvation? Starts with a D. Deliverance. Okay? Because I rejoice in your deliverance. How had the Lord delivered Hannah? He delivered Hannah out of her grief of heart and the vexation that she had with her rival that was happening day in and day out, and even when they went to offer sacrifices, the Lord delivered her how? In giving her a word. In giving her a son. Okay? So I smile at my enemies. Who would that enemy have been? Peninnah, most likely. I smile at her, not out of meanness or anything, but I smile because what? The Lord, I rejoice in the Lord has delivered me. Okay? The Lord has exalted her above her enemies, and by His deliverance, she can smile now at her enemies. Okay? Now, we can do the same thing when we have problems and the Lord delivers us. What offering do we give to God when we pray? Okay? So she comes back in verse 2. No one is holy like the Lord, for there is none beside you, nor is there any rock like our God. She shows her faith and strength in God. There's none. What did he do to answer her prayer? I mean, you think about it. All these years she had been barren. What did he do? Okay. He healed her to the point that she was what? She was able to have a son. Okay. Is there anything that God can't do? Who limits God? We limit him. She had the faith. Remember Eli said, you know, the Lord grant you your request, Hannah. She believed it. He's going to give it to me. God did. So now she can say, there's none beside you. There's no other God that can do what you can do. None whatsoever. You are my rock, and you're going to be my rock. Then she says in verse 3, talk no more so very proudly. Who would have been talking proudly? Benaiah would have been. Okay? Talk no more so very proudly. Now, that is a reference to Benaiah, but it's also, how should we be before God? Should we talk proudly? No. Okay, humble. We should. Let no arrogance come from your mouth. That you can kind of say is a rule from God, that we aren't to be arrogant, boastful, or proud. But she's also kind of, you know, of course, Penaiah, well, I'm not going to say. Is it possible that Penaiah was there to hear this prayer? Did Penaiah go the rest of the times up yearly to sacrifice at Shiloh with her children? She did. She went yearly because, remember, she had her sacrifices from Elkanah. And they went yearly, and she would bother Hannah at the Shiloh at the sacrifice. And Elkanah would give Hannah what? Double portions. Okay? So, yes. Okay? It's possible that Penaiah is sitting over there listening to this prayer and thinking, ooh. You know? Let no arrogance come from your mouth, for the Lord is the God of what? Acknowledge. God knew what was going on. He knew what Penaiah was doing. He knew what Hannah was going through. He knew. He's a God of knowledge. And by him, what? Actions are weighed. So God weighed the actions, and he come through by doing what? Granting Hannah's request. The bowels of the mighty men are broken, and those who stumble are girded with strength. Her confidence and trust in the Lord has been vindicated. She speaks concerning the might and the power of the Lord, and the Lord fights and protects his saints. Those who were full have hired themselves out for bread. The Lord knows what's going on. Those who were full, what does it mean? They lost their fullness. What have they done now? They're having to work, hire themselves out for bread. And the hungry have ceased to hunger. Even the barren has borne what? 7. And she who has many children has become what? Feeble. What happens to Hannah? What happens to Hannah that we'll find? Did she have other kids? She just didn't have the one, did she? She had other kids. Does it mention any more about Penaiah? Doesn't say anything more about Penaiah. She who has many children has become feeble. The Lord kills and makes alive. He brings down to the grave and brings up. Lord makes poor and makes rich. He brings low and lifts up. He raises the poor from the dust and lifts the beggar from the ash heap to set them among princes and make them inherit the throne of glory. The Lord fights. He protects his saints. God's adversaries are going to be humbled, and he judges. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he has set the world upon them. He will guard the feet of his saints, but the wicked shall be silent in darkness. For by strength no man shall prevail. The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken in pieces. Was Penaiah broken in pieces? When she was assaulting Hannah, who else was she assaulting? She was assaulting God. From heaven he will thunder against them. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth. He will give strength to his king and exalt the horn of his anointed. Okay? When you look at this prayer and break it down, there's a lot in it that she did just over just having a child. But she has given God all the credit and everything for it. We find then that Elkanah and Hannah return to Ramah. But who stays? Okay. Samuel stays and he's ministering to the Lord before Eli the priest. Okay. In Numbers chapter 8, and we'll close with this because we're out of time. Numbers chapter 8, starting at verse 23. For your further study, I've read two passages, and they give two different ages. Okay? I don't know. I've not really dove into it yet. But in verses 23 through 26, it talks about the temple service, or the service at the tabernacle. That's where Eli is at. That's where Samuel's at. Verse 23 of Numbers chapter 8. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, this is what pertains to the Levites. Samuel was of that ancestry, okay? We already looked at that in lesson 1. From 25 years old and above, one may enter to perform service in the work of the tabernacle of meeting. Now that work there is doing the actual work, okay? Doing the actual hands-on work, sacrifices, doing all of that. Killing them. From 25 years old and above, one may enter to perform service in the work of the tabernacle of meeting. And at the age of 50 years, they must cease performing this work and shall work no more. Okay? So there it's 25 to 50. There was another place, I believe in Deuteronomy, that said 30 to 50. Okay? For the time for the service. So, you know, I still haven't got it narrowed down. But I'm going to say 25 to 50. They may minister with their brethren in verse 26 in the tabernacle of meeting to attend to needs. Okay? Doesn't give us age limit there. But they themselves shall do no work. Thus you shall do to the Levites regarding their duties. The actual work is 25 to 50 or 30 depending on the Deuteronomy. But any other time, they could do what? If you weren't in that age group to where you could actually do the actual hands-on, what could you do? You could help. You could help minister. Okay? And we find that one of the things that Samuel was doing what? In the morning. What was he doing? We find that after the Lord calls him. He opens the doors in the morning for the tabernacle. That's one of the things that Samuel was doing, opening the doors and assisting Eli in that. Okay? So, any age other than the 25 through 50, they could help. They could minister with their brethren in the tabernacle of meeting to attend to their needs. But 25 to 50, they did the actual work. Okay?
Where, you know, Jesus is referred to as a child at age 12. So that's why I'm thinking Samuel wasn't like this when she left him. He's got to be a pretty good side. And, you know, Jesus didn't even start his preaching until he was 30.
Right, right.
So, you know.
And we know Samuel, when he has the revelation, he has to be old enough to be able to do what?
Go tell him.
To hear.
Yes. Yeah.
You have to be able to hear and understand in the revelation. Blaine?
The cross reference I got, you was talking about 30 years, it had been four or three.
Okay.
So if it's 30 years old and above, even if it's 50 years old, all who enter the service to do the work in the tabernacle of meeting, that's what you're looking for.
That's one of them, yes. Uh-huh. So, we just have to. That's for further study. Okay.
What about how you explain that when she was praying Samuel, she had to go away with a little round her position. Did Samuel know that she could have a child? And as soon as he tells her that, she's relieved she's going to have a baby in her mind. You know.
Run that
okay,
by
when she is praying for a child.
Uh-huh.
And Samuel hears her, and he tells her to go her way, that the Lord grant her.
When Eli.
Yeah, I'm sorry,
yeah, Eli. Uh-huh.
The Lord will grant her petition.
Right.
How do you...
I think she had the faith, because what was Eli?
Well, I mean, but did Eli know that the Lord would grant that? That's what I'm saying. That's kind of...
It doesn't say that the Lord revealed unto Eli that. I just know that she looked at it from the standpoint, it's going to be mostly on her part, with her faith, that Eli was a man of God, and he said, Lord, grant you that petition. Now, whether the Lord granted her that petition because Eli said, the Scripture doesn't say. It doesn't say. I just know that it was more or less like, you know, Jesus told the centurion, you know, as you have believed, so be it. I think she believed because she automatically changed that this man of God, the high man of God, said, you know, the Lord grant your petition and go in peace. And she did. She changed her demeanor and she went and left in peace. And so I think that she felt that the man of God was speaking for God. Whether the Scripture doesn't say that he did. Okay? So I think that that's what she took on faith. Okay, that here's a man of God. Okay. I don't know if that helps any or not.
Well, it does. But they just wonder.
I don't think that the Lord allowed her to have the child because of Eli. Because we find out Eli, I mean, how did the Lord feel about Eli?
Yeah, he was pleased with him in the area of his son.
Well, I mean, when you think that, well, we'll get into it. When he gets it, says to Eli, you're going to be cut off. And not only you, Eli, but your whole family is going to be cut off. There's not one of them anymore that's going to be a priest. I'm going to put somebody else in there. Well, that comes as a shock to Eli because that's down. I mean, that's how bad it was. So I don't think the Lord granted her request for the sake of Eli.
Eli makes a statement, God grant your petition. He didn't say my petition, yeah. He said your petition. So God first heard. Now Eli was confirmed that God would answer her prayer.
Yeah, and he was a man of God, so she was taking it, well, you know, his saying or his prayer ought to be worth something. Okay? Just the same as what do people do with us today, just as a side note. When someone's sick or whatever, who do they get a hold of to have prayers on their behalf? Do they go to the world, or where do they go to? They go to other Christians. Okay. So I see that she, the main high priest, Eli, boy, he told me, so I, you know, it gave her hope. Okay. Anything else?
Okay. Well, as far as the age of Philip, 45 means that even the Mary wouldn't stand them. You have to see when Hannah's prayer was when she took Samuel to Eli. Well, that means that she had seven children before she took him. That means she was there. And Samuel being the oldest.
Well, when she dropped him off, Samuel was the oldest, and then afterwards, when they went back to Ramah, she had more kids. That's how I took that.
I was kind of looking at where her prayer was when she was taken.
Oh, okay. Well, she talks about the seven in her prayer, and that did she have seven kids? Does it say he gave her sons and daughters? Was it three and two? Three sons and two daughters. So she had five, and Samuel would have been six. So I think the seven is more. When you get into numbers, the seven is complete. Could mean complete. But she had three and two, and then Samuel, which was like six.
Yeah, I
kind of
thought seven.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be, you know. But like I say, I don't know his age, and I can't say when he got there. I just know he's in Eli's hands now, and he's dedicated to the tabernacle to do the service. Okay? Appreciate it. Thank you.